Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We don't have an intro, just sort of, we just got, it's just, it's not the, it is kind of the What Culture Gaming podcast, but it's not.
Yeah, it is, but it's also just Josh and Scott's fun time, news time. I don't know, that's the title, like.
That can possibly also be the intro. I have news things, right. Yeah, welcome to the What Culture Gaming podcast. This is whatever the hell we decide to call it eventually, Josh and Scott's fun news time for all. Where we just recap the biggest news stories from the last week. Some stuff breaking on a Monday, because we were initially trying to pick which day to do this on. But we settled on Monday, and so far it's working out all right. How do you feel about doing a news-based podcast on a Monday?
I like it, pal, because I think we get all the good stuff over the weekend, and then we get the stuff that inevitably breaks on Monday. I think if we did it Tuesday, we'd be like, well, maybe we should wait till Wednesday. That's midweek. Mm. And then when we're at Wednesday, we're like, well, you should wait till Thursday. We can't do a podcast on Thursday, because what if something breaks? Then you need something for Friday, Scott.
I know. Speaking of stuff that's broken as well, Mr. Xbox, Mr. Phil Spencer, Mr. X Spencer, he's been talking at Twitch's GlitchCon conference thing, doing a big old speech, and he was talking about, pretty much confirmed, Xbox will buy more studios. So he said, in terms of continuing to invest in new studios and new games and new content, absolutely, we have to do that. It's important that we continue to build out our library of games that are available on Xbox. We'll double the size of our studios organization when we add Bethesda, and we're going to continue to invest in great games so that people can find their next favorite game on our platform. Do you think that they're just going to go all out this generation, just left, right, and center, snapping up Naughty Dog, whatever they can get their hands on?
I mean, why not, I suppose? Like, for them, it probably makes more sense to just splash the cash and get some tried and tested, you know, studios, publishers on their side, rather than build new ones from the ground up, because they've kind of tried that before. And to their credit, it hasn't worked all that well. They had 343, they had, you know, was it the Coalition? It was definitely the Coalition. What was the first name of the Coalition? I can't remember. Doesn't matter. They got put on Gears. They've got the Initiative, I think, is the one now. They've got all of these really convolutedly titled studios that they've tried to build from the ground up, tried to put on their franchises. And it hasn't really worked, Scott Tilford, because the games that have come out, some of them being good, Gears 5 is arguably one of the best games of the generation. But
Halo 5, Josh Brown. I mean, this is an audio-only podcast, so I can't get across my facial expression in audio form, but one of the best games of the generation, Josh Brown.
Yeah, man. Sure, man. I had a good time with that. It was really nice. That's all that counts, is one of the best games of the generation. Did Josh have a good time with it? Yeah, I did.
Gears 5, Kentucky Route Zero, all up in there. Top 5. All you need. Yeah, I think that, I mean, they, like, it's been so weird now that I finally got a hold of the Series X, and then going like back and forward PS5 Series X, and sort of, you know, weighing up the pros and the cons of both systems, and indulging in Game Pass, going back to old titles, backwards compatibility, everything like that. And like the Xbox side of it, I get what they've been going for, and I didn't fully get it until I had the new system in my hands. But when you have, like, you know, the UI that just sort of, like, it's liquid butter, everything just loads, everything's nice and fast, everything gets auto-updated, auto-up-res as well, everything runs in 4K, 68 frames per second, old games get auto-HDR, all that kind of thing. I get the whole push for, let's just acquire as many studios as we can and let's move away from exclusives. I don't, like, you know, want that necessarily. I always want the newest, fanciest games. I like the idea of the budgets that can be allocated on a first-party basis. But well, like I said, using the Xbox and stuff, I like the whole family of titles, Netflix for games thing. That finally made so much sense when I had a system that could actually just juggle that many titles at once.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I know I do this all the time. It's kind of anecdotal evidence. And I know the entire games industry or people who play games aren't just my dumb mates who I talk to on a weekend. But I was talking to my dumb mates on the weekend, right? So, right. And I was talking to them about, like, you know, the next-gen consoles. And they were asking whether or not they should get one. And I was talking through, like, the pros and cons and stuff. And then my mate Jack was like, I think the future is going to be some kind of, like, streaming service, you know, like a Netflix. He was like, when's that going to arrive? And I was like, it's already here.
Sorry,
like, Game Pass is here. It's incredibly, you know, cheap considering the amount of games you get, the amount of services that are rolled into it. Mm. And as soon as I told him that, as soon as I said, the next Bethesda games, the next Fallout, the next Elder Scrolls, whatever, they're going to be there day one. He was just kind of like, well, why do I need anything else? Like, this is perfect for me as a kind of casual gamer. Why would I want to invest, pay £70 for a PlayStation 5 edition, mm-hmm. perhaps, when I can get this service, when I can get this, you know, a cheaper alternative console if you get the Xbox Series S? And I feel like, you know, when it comes to accessibility, when it comes to broadening the playground, I guess, Microsoft have done that just great job over the past generation of just getting everyone in, getting them on the Xbox brand, getting them on the Xbox service, mm-hmm. and delivering something that is competitive, it's really good, and most importantly, it appeals to people who might only buy a few games a year because they can try new things, they can you know, enjoy the games that they know they like, the franchise that they know they like. So if they go down that route, it makes sense for them to buy up studios to help bolster that selection because there's already that built-in audience who will come for it.
It makes you wonder, like, how much exclusives could or maybe should going forward be viewed as luxury, you know, products, like luxury things that can get put on top of that base reason you buy the system in the first place. Like, yeah, we keep up with so many exclusives. We keep up with whatever the newest stuff out is. But unless I'm talking to you or the people that are like we're working with, hardly anybody else that I'm in contact with is keeping up with those games. So maybe it just makes, you know, someone could have waited and played Red Dead 2 for free or, you know, part of the Game Pass, you know, lineup or whatever, if they just waited a few months as opposed to dropping £60 on it so they can do it straight away. And I just wonder if that just makes so much more sense for a mass audience. Like, we put so much stock on exclusives and new stuff and the latest cutting edge releases, but maybe it just makes more sense, like on a consumer level, to just wait it out and you get those games anyway if you just wait long enough. The only thing you'll never get is the first party stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, like, it's funny because I feel like, you know, we're obviously very into this industry. It's what we're doing as a job. So we're going to be there day one, like, splashing all of this cash on these games. And I've always thought that was fine until this weekend when, in preparation for the PlayStation 5, I went to buy some games for it. And no, I won't stop talking about this, Scott, because I know I've absolutely blanked your head about it in texts and stuff. But I couldn't believe that Demon's Souls and Spider-Man Miles Morales came to like £120. That seemed ridiculously steep where I could buy these games in a few months for cheaper. But it's because I want that excitement at launch. I want to be there with these games and have something exciting to play. But I just think, like, that
the prices are ridiculous.
Yeah, the prices are ridiculous, especially when the competition is more or less doing the exact opposite and being like, look, chuck us £15 and you can have Gears 5 on launch day. You can have Elder Scrolls 6. You know, we're not really bothered. Buy them if you want. But also, it's just two very different approaches. I don't necessarily think one is right and one is wrong, but they both certainly have pros and cons, I think.
Yeah, if you have a set amount of notes you're going to throw at one company or the other, Xbox is ludicrously good value for money. And I feel like Sony have been playing catch-up. Like, they did the whole PS Plus collection thing. Of like, well, you know, we have games too. You can give us monthly thing and here's a bunch of stuff. But, like, their general mentality is not so focused. Like, Xbox is entirely focused on Game Pass and accessibility and, you know, you, like, use xCloud and you can stream it in. And, like, you know, you can start Batman on your phone, beam it across and continue when you get home, stuff like that. Like, you've always got this access to this library of games, which I feel like it kind of fluctuates on the Sony side. So fascinated by how all that's going to play out across the next few years, because they're going in complete opposite directions. Although, like I said, Sony have tried to play catch up. I did, as one sort of like big talking point, Colin Moriarty was saying that he wondered Sacred Symbols fame, was saying that he wondered if the level of quality of the games that are in the PS Plus collection is bigger than everything that is on Game Pass. And I think that'll like almost definitely be disproven over time. Because you'll get, you know, the Dooms, everything that Bethesda has access to will be on Game Pass. But it's that, I think there's that whole thing of like, is a collection of first party PS4 titles worth more, quote unquote, than all of these other titles on Game Pass? I don't think so, but I think that was an interesting talking point.
I don't think I necessarily agree with it, but I think that's how Sony's viewing it, especially because, you know, the past generation, they built their brand on these exclusives are premium to the point where now we're actually going to charge more for them because that's just how high quality they are. That's like, you know, if you want to buy them, well, you got to pony up the money. And I think, you know, for better or worse, they're definitely doubling down on that and being like, look, yeah, we might have less to offer, but it's quality over quantity. Again, I don't think that's necessarily true because I think Games Pass does have some amazing games in it, especially, you know, both first party exclusives right down to like indies that you might not try out otherwise, like the Outer Wilds or something. But it's certainly, I think, Sony's approach, and we'll see how that plays out. Hopefully not in the hubris, like arrogance riddled style that had them dropping down in the good graces with people during the PlayStation 3.
That's the thing that I think, if you're a lifelong PlayStation fan or you've been following the industry for a while, there's a lot of what they're doing at the minute that reeks of where they were at the start of the PS3, where it just, it is that whole thing where they came off the PS2, the highest selling console of all time, and they just went, okay, let's just charge a ridiculous amount and you'll pay it because you love PlayStation. And everybody just went, no, we won't. We'll go over here instead. And I think the missing thing here on Xbox's side is exclusives, just to tick that box. Even though I think the Game Pass as an archive, you know, as a platform of stuff is incredible. But I think if they could just ice that cake off with a little bit of Halo, then they could have done it. They could have, because he's all over the box. Like, he was, Master Chief was clearly going to be the thing.
I know, man.
Selling the next generation of Xbox, but he's delayed into 2021. Speaking of the PS5, though, next news item is that the PS5 has very much hit its first massive bug, sort of known as the queued for download bug. I got stabbed twice by this bug. One, basically the bug is that you'll go to redeem something on the store, or you might have bought something on the store, and the game will not download. It'll stick on queued for download, which is where they do their server ping, where your console is connecting to whatever their servers are to say, I have this thing now, please let me download it. And that is when you know, the icon grays out. It says queue for download while it does the connection, and then your download will start and that gray icon thing will free up again. It just never frees up, but because there's no download started, and that means there's no file to get it to grab to delete. You're just stuck in limbo. Like, there's no way to get out of it. The quote-unquote solution is a full factory reset of the PlayStation 5, which means that obviously all your saves are stored on the cloud, but it means resetting up the console again, reinstalling all the games again, and holding your breath for the, like, you know, dear life when you then go to re-download other stuff or buy other stuff. But yeah, this has hit a lot of other people. I was ringing Sony support talking about it, and I experienced it before the US release date, but it was one of those things they were trying to figure out back then, and it's sort of like snowballed into a much bigger problem now. But I think that, you know, the, another thing that goes alongside this in terms of PS5 bugbears, is that they've got another thing, which is just sheer confusion. I think you've seen the articles on how to tell if you're playing the PS5 version of a game.
Yeah.
And one of the things that seems to come from is that on the PlayStation 4's dashboard, the new XMB, it can just offer you the wrong version of the game. If you've bought something like Call of Duty, Black Ops Cold War, or The Pathless, or even Sackboy, some of those games will default on the menu to the wrong version, and you have to go into the three dot icon and change it to the PS5 version. But also, like when Kotaku wrote their piece, how to tell if you're playing the next gen version, it could not be more obvious that these cross-gen games do not, you know, they're not that much better on next gen. And like, that's coming from me, who's played both of them and can kind of attest to that. Like, yes, there's frame rates, yes, there's load times, but if you put Spider-Man Miles Morales next to its PS4 counterpart, it's not that different.
Yeah, I suppose that's the stickler, isn't it? That's the thing. That's the kind of press that you don't want. You don't want people to be accidentally playing PlayStation 4 games on the PlayStation 5 when they have the PlayStation 5 version.
It looks great. Look how shiny it is.
More importantly, you don't want people to not be able to tell the difference or not notice that they're playing the wrong version in the first place. Like, I'm yet to get my hands on the console. You know, touch wood.
Hey.
I can't see. I'm just touching everything around me. Touch wood that it's touch wood. Mine's going to be arriving on Thursday. But I'd hope that, you know, these kind of small bugs were sort of ironed out, that I wouldn't have to factory reset my machine just to download a game. I wouldn't have to go into the toggles just to make sure I'm playing the right version of it. Like, you know, I'm really looking forward to PlayStation 5. Like I said, I don't want this to come across as anti-Sony because of the last thing, but I just feel like when it comes to just sheer ease of use, like the Xbox Series X, even though I'm not getting one, just feels like it's just that bit more intuitive, that bit easier. Smart delivery, you could say. It's very smart, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, like I said, having gone between the two, the Series X like, I like the PS5 a lot. I like the UI stuff that they've got. I love the card system, the activity system. I love them suggesting different parts of a game to dive into, make sure you're seeing 100% of a game. And I like all that stuff. When you go on the Series X, though, like the way that they organize cloud saves, the way that they organize the libraries themselves, Xbox and Microsoft have clearly been planning for this for a long time. Oh, no, Josh Brown, you've gone very dark, but if your audio is still coming through,
then it's all right.
We're coming back.
He's coming back.
I'm revitalized. No one can see this, but I'm coming back.
I can
back
see it. I lost you for a sec. But yeah, I think that the way that the Xbox library stuff, like I said, the cloud save stuff, the fact that it's what they've been planning, it's why they called it that smart delivery thing. Like, they knew that people were going to go from multiple versions of the same game and then, you know, be able to jump into the next gen one as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And they've very much planned for that. Whereas on the Sony side, you've got separate tiles in your library for like alphas and betas. You've got the like previous version of the PS4 one, or maybe even the beta, being suggested on your home dashboard, and the cloud save stuff, it doesn't bring your save in automatically. You can't access cloud saves inside the game. You've got to go in the settings and make sure it's all downloaded properly before you boot something up. It's just, those things feel like they've been playing catch up with Xbox's whole, everybody's welcome, you know, we're going to respect your past purchases stuff. I think the original plan for the PS5 was to just go full bore next generation exclusives, you know, like nothing, PS4 games don't work, or like a selection mm-hmm. of them would, or whatever. And, you know, and don't worry about it. And now they've gone, oh crap, we should actually be catering to millions of people who have PS4s. And they've kind of like rushed to implement this stuff in the UI, and it's really messy. There's a streamlined nature to the Series X that you can tell is what they've been planning on, like for months and months. And I think that
totally.
I like them both, but the Series X feels a hell of a lot more confident when it comes to, you know, storefront stuff, organization of your library, things like that.
There have always been like a few PlayStation quirks, let's be generous, I suppose, that have always been a bit more obtuse than they should be. You know, I didn't even mention the idea of changing, you know, the PlayStation ID for like 12 years or whatever, you were stuck with that bad lad for. But yeah, there's always been, like, when it comes to UI in particular, UI features, I always feel like, despite how much I love the XMB and the PlayStation 4, the designers have always seemed like, you know, a step behind. You could even look at the PlayStation Store and the PlayStation 3 being a web browser push out, you know what I mean? They've always slightly been one step behind the competition. So hopefully that's all this is and not any kind of, you know, last minute fumble or anything like that.
Okay, so for our next thing, I will address the fact that our audio might have changed a little bit. Some things might sound a little bit different, and we encountered a bit of an interruption, and we've come back, we've done some other stuff, and we're going to do the rest of the show. Might have been totally fine, might have not needed to say anything, but you never know. You never know, Josh Brown, so you've got to do it.
You've got to let the people know, man. Like, what if there would have been someone out there who would have noticed the minor inconsistency and never had been able to sleep tonight because they wouldn't have known what was going on.
So we covered Xbox stuff, Mr. Phil Spencer, and then we talked about PS5 bugs. I was going to talk about some stuff about the availability of the consoles themselves, because this also came from Phil Spencer talking at GlitchCon, who said the number one request I get over and over is that it's so hard to get the consoles right now, and I really apologize for that. We've been building them for almost 2 months now, and we're trying to get as many into the stores as we can, but the demand is just so high. Walmart also said that they did four complete restocks on the same day, and they all sold out within minutes. Amazon have also delayed their Series X deliveries until December, even for paid consumers, and it seems that they'll be doing the same for some PS5 stock. What's your general thoughts on, like, I guess after the year we've had, it was always whether or not people are going to have the amount of money to throw at new systems. It seems like they do in record numbers, to the point where it's beating even the estimates on the Xbox side.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the desire is obviously there. I know for me, with not having anything else to look forward to, you know, like outside any events, any gigs, anything like that, like this,
not a single thing.
not a single thing. Try not to be too down on it, but no, this has been the thing I've been looking forward to, you know what I mean, for like the past few months. It's been the one thing that I've been saving up for, the day that I'm looking forward to taking off playing the new consoles or whatever. So the desire is obviously there, but even then I didn't expect the output to be so limited, because I was expecting pre-orders to be quite, you know, limited, and how many were going to be there for launch day, you know, like they were going to do them in waves just by, you know, having that experience with the PlayStation 4. But even then, like, the lack of any kind of like second wave of consoles, a third wave of consoles, at least, you know, across retails or whatever, just shocked even me. I thought we would get at least more chances to pre-order, more chances to put your name forward. Like, I was lucky enough to be up that night covering the conference with you, and then Ben Roy. If Ben Roy didn't message me saying pre-orders are up now, I wouldn't have had a console. I wouldn't have been able to lock one down. Like, it was just pure sort of luck for the most part that someone informed me. And I think that's the case for a lot of people, to be like, right, you can get one for this tiny amount of time. Otherwise, you're kind of screwed. Like, I had one friend who didn't manage to get one, and they're just like, what do I do? And I'm like, I don't know. If they've not conveyed anything, I guess just hang about on a launch day, hopefully get a kick and click and collect. But even that's going to be incredibly hectic.
It was, I mean, it's so weird. I didn't have a pre-order down for the on the Xbox side, but I was always planning on getting one. I just didn't, I don't like paying for something if I can't pay for it and get and secure it. Like, I just, I don't like it. I want something to be on sale, I'll pay for it. I don't trust giving my money to pre-orders. I just don't like it, Josh Brown. And so I was kind of, I was always waiting to get an Xbox, but I tried to get like pre-order the PS5, but even that's been sort of delayed. But the weird thing with the pre-order stuff is like, if all the websites are down, like in the UK, it's like Argos and Currys and John Lewis, and none of their pages even load, you can't even register your interest on something. They're just out of stock. And Amazon were just like, we don't know when we're getting more of these units in. And you sort of just sit there like, well, I don't know if you don't know. Like, how am I supposed to even, like, how can I even tell you that I want this if you're not, like, taking any record of people getting stuff? And so with my Series X, I literally just happened to be checking Twitter at 2 a.m, like, refreshing the latest feed of the words Xbox Series X UK stock. And one guy was like, if you go on Currys right now, there's 10 available. And I just mad scrambled and did it. And that's how I got my Series X. But it was literally 2 a.m, random thing. Someone else said that Argos refilled some of their stock at 4 a.m, and some people managed to grab them then, but it was just like 7 units. But I just don't know how, I guess I haven't like followed it on the ground, because we weren't working like this the last console generation. Like, we were sort of, I was at Aquaculture, but it was, we didn't follow like the stock rollouts and stuff. And it just seems crazy. Like, how do you plan for this for so many months? You know the demand's going to be there, and then you can't even tell respective, stockists that they're going to be able to supply the units. And so those websites are all down, and everyone just sort of sits there going, well, I don't actually know when I can get one. Like, I'm assuming at some point they'll be available again.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Yeah, I think part of it's just natural, like, this sort of obstruction kind of comes with a console launch. Like, no matter how much they can anticipate the desire for one. I mean, we had those rumors earlier that, like, PlayStation especially upped their production units from what they initially projected earlier in the year. So it's not like they're, you know, sat there with like 5 PlayStations in the warehouse being like, well, I guess we might as well make some more if we can, I suppose, if we're bothered. And like, they're obviously trying to do that. It's just like trying to keep that production up with the demand, and hopefully, you know, the PlayStations will get easier to produce and stuff. And everything that's obviously been happening around the world, we've had like factory shutdowns and stuff, which apparently didn't impact them, but you must assume would have impacted them in some form. Mm-hmm. Every single industry's been impacted in some form, you know what I mean? But even then, it has been, like I said, like just kind of like shockingly limited. And it makes me wonder how long it'll go on for, because if you go on Game, for instance, now trying to get a PlayStation 5, like, I think the next orders that they're taking on, which obviously is out of stock, I think that's getting delivered like the 18th of December, which is around about the time I think Amazon is doing the Xboxes and the PlayStation as well, like where they've been delayed to. So Maybe there'll be another wave before the end of the year, but then, like, does this go until January, February, March, April? Like, when does it become easily available?
Yeah, like I said, when do they get enough stock where it's comfortable, where, like, the demand, like, you know, peters down a bit until it matches the supply? Like, I just, the game side, though, for those of us in the UK, like, their whole, just go in this queue, wait 30, 40 minutes, then you'll have 2 or 3 minutes to pre-order a console. And I waited half an hour, and then when it loaded, it just said out of stock again. But what the hell have I queued? Fall like there's not even anything, it's just queuing to go to the end of a cliff, like there's just nothing there. But I think we'll keep on top of this stuff. Obviously it is just ludicrous amounts of demand, and they've tried to match their supply, but obviously that just hasn't been the case. I'm quite glad that Mr. Phil Spencer's getting out there acknowledging it. You know, someone is sort of public forward facing as him, just saying like, we know we're trying to get there. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they can get back on top of it. It sucks for the delays until December, for the people that have paid. I feel so sorry for those people. But still, the next news thing, which we talked about a little bit on the YouTube channel, some separate videos on this, because Avengers just keeps falling from just hitting every branch on the way down. And the latest statistic on Avengers is that it's lost 96% of its player base, at least on PC. Only 752 people were averaging it on Steam. Does that remotely surprise you at this point?
Not really, like, no, just because, like you said, we've covered this so much. We've covered about, like, you know, the DLC roadmap being pushed back, all the bugs and stuff, people not being there, the game not selling very well in the first place. Like, I don't blame people for dropping off. I think even Ewan, who loved jumping on there and watching the numbers go up, I don't think he's even been on it for a while.
Have you
stopped playing it? That's when I know something's gone desperately wrong.
Same, because if you deleted it, I keep forgetting it exists. Like, I went through all my stuff.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it's all my stuff to carry across from PS4 to PS5. And I was like, oh yeah, the Avengers happened. Like, that was a whole thing. Like, that was a whole game.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because it's like the Avengers. This should be like a big milestone, a big gaming thing. And I know, at least me and you, we've sort of treated it as like, oh yeah, I remember when we played that and when we finished the story and then never thought about it again, except when we did videos. And it's not a game that I want to do that with Scott Tales, but I want to enjoy it. I want it to be good. I'm looking forward to Spider-Man. I want the content to be there.
Yeah.
But I just think they've kind of, you know, they've sort of shot themselves in the foot by releasing a game that was lacking in content, that had a load of bugs, which has resulted in them pushing back like the next-gen version. It's resulted in them pushing back the DLC roadmap, like I said. If you don't have those things, it's like, well, why would I want to play it now? Why would I buy it now when it's clearly not finished, when the content is yet to come? Hopefully it gets an upkick. Like, I want to see this game do well, so hopefully it gets an upkick when those DLC plans finally come to fruition. Like, the next gen version does come around and people want to try it, or the cost comes down or something. But right now it's sort of like, I don't know, it's just like dead air, isn't it? It's like, it exists, but it doesn't. It's Schrodinger's video game, like, yeah.
I keep forgetting that it was coming out. I remember the more I read about how much that game cost, the amount of years that it took to put together, like the $100 million budget thing, and it's lost them like $48 million or something. I just, what did you build that isn't there? Like, just, do you have more to come? Is there entire, I know there's characters to come, but are there entire storylines, threads, cutscenes, levels that were just siphoned off because they were like, well, we'll have this active player base and we'll plug stuff in across like the next few months and years and everything, because there's no sign of that. And then they've been doing those like tacky on raids or whatever, which are very much tacked on, to be fair. But it's that whole thing of like, you're gonna go into this one base and take on waves of enemies and stuff, and we've done those missions in every single video game now. And I remember holding back initially, saying like, oh, you know, it's not like, it's not another Anthem, because at least there's characters that we love and there's like, there's a little bit more of an investment, there is a campaign with decent, you know, cutscenes and everything, which Anthem tried a story but it didn't really land. But the longer it plays out, it does feel like another Anthem, where it's just,
dude,
you know, it's just not gonna get there.
Yeah, like, I'm the exact same, but I think at this point, in terms of its release, its reception, and its post-release plans, I think it is literally another Anthem. You know what I mean? The exact same mistakes are repeating themselves. Like, it came out, players dropped off incredibly quick when they realized what the content actually was. The roadmap got delayed. Anthems had still yet to come to fruition properly. Like, they're supposedly working on Anthem 2.0. Mm-hmm. It makes me worried, because, like, will this content for Avengers just get indefinitely delayed again? Like, Ewan was saying to me the other day that apparently both the Hawkeye characters, you know, Kate Bishop and I've forgotten the man Hawkeye.
Mr. Hawkeye, Clint Barton.
Clint Barton, yes. They were supposed to be already out by now, but obviously that hasn't happened. Like I said, next-gen versions just, MIA as well. And it's like, at what point does it get to the same position Anthem's in, where Crystal Dynamics is like, right, trust me, we're going back to the drawing board. We're doing the Avengers 2.0. Coming next year, it'll be free. We'll get you back in then. We're going to just cut ties.
I mean, like, Square Enix are so money grubby and ruthless with, like, what they greenlight and get rid of. And even if it's stuff that has promise, like the Hitman IP, they're just like, ah, it's not making enough. See you later. And I kind of just think it's all of it has always reeked of Square Enix's interference anyway. But I think if you held back, you know, you've still got all the Black Panther DLC that was meant to be coming out that they said was going to line up. Yeah. It was meant to be coming out around the time that Chadwick Boseman passed away. So they were like, we're going to wait and we'll delay it and we'll put it out later. But, like, there's been no mention of that since. And it's like, you could make the game free to play. You still, I guess, when you mentioned Spider-Man, I forgot they were even doing that. Like, what a terrible investment that is on Sony's part. Like, know, the amount of money and ill will they had to suck up, like, or like put out there doing the Spider-Man exclusive stuff, and the game's bombed. It's like releasing this multi-million dollar DLC character for like 10 people by the time next year.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous.
Like, maybe you'll get people back in, but I don't know. Like, I'm probably not going to jump back in. Maybe just that one mission with Spider-Man, but I don't think it's going to be like a saving grace or anything like that, you know?
No. Speaking of saving graces, this one, I picked this story. I mean, it's a big talking point. It's Call of Duty, but you'll see a very specific reason why I picked this story. So a lot of ongoing stuff with Call of Duty is the way that it's handling, it's balancing on the fact that it's cross-platform, you know, PS4 playing against Xbox, playing against PC, dogs and cats living together, etc. And so there's a whole thing with this where if you play on PlayStation, you're like, you get way more bonuses, XP bonuses, unlock, stuff like that, to the point where it is ridiculous. Like, if you're on PlayStation, you get plus 25% weapon XP if multiple players play together. Even if that squad is comprised of PlayStation, Xbox, PC people, the PlayStation players will pull ahead by a quarter of the overall percent XP if they play together. And PlayStation people get two extra character slots, you get exclusive monthly XP bonuses, and you also get an exclusive mode called Zombie Onslaught. I feel like exclusivity stuff with Call of Duty happens every year, but in regards to the XP grind and the fact that it's cross-platform, that's a massive thing. The update, and this is the reason I picked this or wanted to highlight it, is that the lead designer for Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, his name is Tony Flame. Mr. Tony Flame has weighed in on the accusations of the game being unbalanced. Mr. Tony Flame says, there will be weapon score streak and more balance changes coming with Season 1, if not sooner. Already seeing some interesting trends in the analytics, but it's too close for conclusions. What do you think of what Mr. Tony Flame has to say?
Well, thank you, Tony Flame, for handing this over to me, the microphone over to me. Right, Scott, we did a video on this, and I wasn't happy with it then. We were pretty annoyed, especially when it comes to the double XP, the double weapon XP, obviously being siphoned off, and that giving some people a better advantage to unlock weapons, weapon upgrades, weapon attachments, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Having since played it all weekend playing the multiplayer, same. Like, that is even worse now, I think, because the grind, especially when it comes to leveling up the weapons, is so arduous and so slow, I find, compared to other Call of Duties that I'm putting a lot of time into these guns and barely unlocking anything. Mm. So to have this extra weapon XP coming in from like Sony's platform or whatever, that is alluring, that is appealing. And it's like, which came first? Did the grind come first, then Sony just kind of added it on top, or is the grind this way because these deals were in place? It's very strange, and I'm sure it's probably not that nefarious, but it was interesting jumping in and realizing, ooh, this is weird. It's taken me a long time to level up this MP5, and they're also offering this kind of promotional thing for PlayStation. This is a strange coincidence, Scott.
I think you don't know which one came first. I think the grind came first, because I think once we talk load, you can go on the YouTube channel, we talk load. It's not like it hasn't been covered. The development cycle of this game, you know, they swapped some developers out. They sort of managed to get it over the finish line, but it feels like the overall project scope has been sort of chopped and changed quite a lot. A lot of people are realizing that Black Ops Cold War has reused assets from, I think it's Black Ops 4. And there's like various things that sort of carry over and point to the idea that, you know, this is sort of has been chopped and changed to get it over the finish line, to line it up with the console launch cycles. And so I think for me, the grind came first, or at least was part of that, where, you know, they have to try and make it so that this game is still worth £70 or however much they want to cost it.
Yeah.
And that is literally just a case of, let's just drag everything out so you're playing it for longer, so you feel like you get your money's worth, even if the actual brass tacks of what you're interacting with could be tightened up. I think that those things will change going forward. I mean, he says that there'll be balance changes coming. But I think in regards to unlocks, like, I don't know. I mean, this whole PlayStation thing, I don't know if that lasts for the whole year. Like, most of the PlayStation things, when they do exclusivity stuff, it's a one-year window. But, like, by the time a few months have passed, or even right now, like, PlayStation players are going to pull ahead, which is just going to look bad on their part. So it's kind of on them to fix it. But I feel like the actual grind side of it is something that they've just sort of implemented and dragged out because they want people playing all year long, but it directly clashes with the Sony side of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think in general, like, even though, like we said, you know, both of us are enjoying the game, I feel like you can tell where the content just isn't there. Like, there are fewer weapons than ever. The attachments, especially when it comes to, like, the sights, like, are very interchangeable, I find, and it takes longer to unlock them. And I do think it's sort of an intentional kind of decision, like, just to make it feel like there's more there than there actually is, because otherwise you might get people like just blitzing it on the weekend, leveling up all their guns and being like, well, where's the rest? You know what I mean? Season one doesn't start until December the 10th, I think, you know, like 3 weeks or something. So we're going to be waiting a little while. We're going to be using these weapons and this play style and these unlocks and these operators for like another 3 weeks before more content presumably comes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that, another side of it is like, yeah, that they will assumedly have various things to roll out for the roadmap, and then it'll be a more complete package, like in the coming months and stuff. I think the idea of a platform paying for XP boosts on their side, I just think that's it's a step too far in regards to, I mean, you've got like exclusive modes that we've always had things like that, but I just, like I said, being in a cross-party, a cross-platform party, and then having one set of players pull ahead, even though you're all playing the same matches, even though you're all on Team Deathmatch or whatever, like that just seems like something we've never seen before, and I feel like it should kind of be highlighted a lot more than it is.
I think in general, like the whole idea of XP boosts are getting like way more nefarious than they used to be. I think Jim Sterling did like a good video on it maybe last year or something, and with the way COD does it especially, I noticed this on Modern Warfare, like the fact that they're so limited for the most part. You get like 15 minutes, you get half an hour, you get 45 minutes, you get an hour, but like they all tick over when you're in the lobby, so you get this feeling of, man, I need to play, I need to get in, I need to be as good as possible. And like there's always been an element of that, but I feel like that's getting just pushed up with every new release to the point where like they're very like manipulative in the way that they like demand your time, and they make you feel like you're missing out if you're not in a game. If you're in the lobby and you can see the timer ticking down, it's like, oh my god, I'm not gonna get the most out of these weapons or something. And that obviously, you know, is impacted by the fact that you have these battle passes that you can pay to like skip tiers and level up faster and stuff like that. So it's certainly one to watch, I think, going forward.
I just, the amount of money that is doing the rounds in the AAA gaming industry, and obviously like this, the generation that's ending, we pushed back so much against microtransactions that I feel like everyone on the top tier is trying to find new ways to fleece the consumer base. And it's like, if we can do that, I mean, if they can make a million sponsorship deals in regards to like, you know, drink this particular energy drink and get this particular XP boost, then they're going to cash in all those things. And the XP grind stuff hasn't been dragged through the muck just yet, but I think that stuff like this makes it incredibly obvious that it's nefarious as hell. So I guess we'll see how it goes. Final news thing, I wanted to give a shout out to an Oxford study by Mr. Andrew Shabilsky. I love this dude. He's the guy that I actually did my dissertation on back in the day when I was at uni. Mr. Andrew Shabilsky, his surname is spelled P-R-Z-Y-B-Y-L-S-K-I, but it's pronounced Shabilsky.
Nice.
And he initially wrote a paper on video game loops, like addiction loops, and the idea that you're always on this sort of treadmill of feedback. And, you know, it's that idea of like something like Dark Souls, it will delay when that loop closes so that when it finally does, when you finally beat a boss, that satisfaction is all the more greater because you've expanded the loop. And there's all this whole sort of scientific breakdown or psychological breakdown of what it means to engage with various game systems and basically why games are satisfying. I love all that stuff. And he's done a very recent Oxford study talking about how games are good for your mental health. But he's such a G because he's diving into like talking about how the general sort of perception of video games obviously is aligned with addiction and all these sort of negative stipulations and lots of toxic stuff. And he says that, you know, the conclusion of the most recent study is that something like Animal Crossing is good for your mental health. He said that the study shows that if you play for 4 hours a day, something like Animal Crossing, you're a much happier human being. But then he rolls in the comparison and says, but that's only interesting because of all the other research before this is done so badly. The new stuff, he says, this is about bringing games into the fold of psychological research that is not a dumpster fire. This lets us explain and understand games as a leisure activity. It was a quest to figure out the data collected by game companies can be vaguely useful for academic and health policy research, which just is a sort of turning of the tide. Like, obviously, there's so many discussions around video game addiction, which obviously are rightly, you know, need to be picked apart and everything. But the psychological benefits of video games, the escapism, things like that, like, I feel like he's right. Like, you know, there's so much... so many studies done on video game play that don't focus on the positive sides. They tend to go straight down the addiction route as opposed to treating it like any other leisure activity and getting the positives out of that. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. Like, it's just sort of an area of research that's sort of underutilized and underfunded, I suppose. Like, like these studies, like you said, rarely come out because I suppose these studies don't necessarily get the clicks. Like, you always have, you know, people, websites, you know, outlets that don't really cover video games, and then suddenly it's like, my kid spent 10 grand on FIFA points, and yes, that is bad, but it's almost like sensationalizing the bad parts of the industry that's kind of been in the media for, like, since video games were a thing, you know what I mean? Mm. Video games cause violence, video games are gonna make your kid rip off his
video games stole your wife.
Spine like Sub-Zero, video games stole your wife. But this is, like, I think it's incredibly important, like, especially in a year like 2020, when video games have been more helpful than ever. Like, when we've done, like, these podcasts before, like, I've opened up about how video games, especially this year, have, like, helped me, like, have grounded me in a way that other entertainment forms just, like, haven't. Like, they've been so essential for me, for just making me feel like I'm here and not spiral out into this, like, existential kind of, like, pit of doom scrolling through Twitter or whatever. It's one of the only things where I can properly engage my brain 100% and I don't have that, you know, errant thought of thinking about day-to-day life. But
no, but I think, like, that, yeah, man, it's like that, like you said, there's so, it's so essential. Like, I mean, there's obviously been studies done in the past and they highlight the idea that, you know, playing games online, it can help with team building skills and social skills. And then, like you said, goal setting and being able to organize, like, you know, be able to structure something towards achieving that goal. I think that the thing that he talks about, like, you know, bringing the positive side of things in, to the referring to the a lot of the past psychological research as a dumpster fire, is pretty good. Because in the full write-up, you know, he talks about the World Health Organization and how there's just so much more that needs to be done. Like, you know, video games are everywhere. And he says, like, look, this is something that 95% of teenagers do. But whenever we're asked about the specifics of why 95% of teenagers do this, get involved in video games, the answers aren't necessarily there. And they tend to skew sort of more negative and more reactionary or more over the top. So, yeah, big love to Mr. Shabilsky. I like what he's putting together. And we'll keep an eye on it. For now, though, this has been whatever the hell we called this. We called this Josh and Scott's News Fun Time-orama. Maybe we'll just give it a different name every week. For now, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com.
I mean, Josh from WhatCulture.com.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.